Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, everybody. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio on the blog Blog Talk Radio Network and the Sober Couch Radio Network. Sober Couch, Half Measures Room, and Rum Radio. Also, like to acknowledge WNAH. I think in Nashville, Tennessee, folks have put us out in an hour broadcast over their constituency there in downtown Nashville, parts of Arkansas and Tennessee, as a public interest announcement, because they really appreciate the their customers and their listening audiences. This is a good way of giving back with good pertinent community information. I'd like to acknowledge recoverytoday.net. It's an excellent recovery magazine, not particularly all AA, but gives you all kinds of varied ideas of what's coming up in the medical industry, in recovery, what's being done, ideas from really good authors. I'm acknowledging them because I like the magazine, and they put one of my articles in there from Rum Radio. Bill was the sale, Dr. Bob was the anchor. An alliteration, of course, and done a little different than most people are accustomed to, but it's a good write to get an idea. And the bottom line was Dr. Bob and Bill W. were just average kind of guys who were able to put together a phenomenal organization that's helped millions off the time. And the point is that God uses the weak things of this world to accomplish his end. So if you get a chance, it's recoverytoday.net, WNAH out of Nashville. It's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who gives us this time on a weekly basis. This week's installment is going to be on meetings in your neck of the woods. Meetings in AA are like a cross between a self-help program, group therapy, and a revival meeting. Those are usually what you're going to find in recovery meetings. We have a meeting of the minds if you're so inclined with memories of habits that drove us insane. A free exchange of facts that transform, reshape, and implications that engage thoughts that there is a better way. Now, we have your first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm going to start with that, what it looks like. Now, there's I'm going to do this, I think, in the coming weeks. GSO, which is the General Service Organization, puts out pamphlets. And one of the pamphlets they put out is a little questionnaire to try to determine whether you believe that you might have a drinking problem or not. There's no one could really say that you're an alcoholic. Only you can say that. Now, there's certain signs that are common amongst alcoholics. You always know when your next drink is going to be, or you're thinking about having your next drink. You're putting off drinking for a certain period of time. You can't leave any alcohol on the table. Car accidents, DWIs, divorces, things that are related to alcoholism. You don't drink for a long time, and when you do drink, you don't really stop binge drinking. You only drink on the weekends. You only drink wine. You only drink beer. You only drink hard liquor. You can stop at any time, but you're going to stop. Sometimes months can go by with some people who are acknowledged alcoholics. And then they'll pick up that first drink of alcohol and off to the races they go. Once they start the craving, I know for myself, I could usually have two beers. I could have two drinks of alcohol, and I could stop after two. If I had the third beer or the third ounce of alcohol, usually that would trigger my craving, and then I would go. But even the times when I only had the two, I noticed that it was a certain irritability that would accompany that. But so there's certain little guidelines that to show you they usually by now, by the time you're inquiring onto these things, something's come up. Otherwise, why are you inquiring? You know, the normal drinkers don't think about when their next drink is or when the last drink was or how much alcohol they have in their home. They just don't. It doesn't really enter into their psyche. An alcoholic will consider all these aspects of alcohol. It's one of the primary things that you think about, you know, like, when am I going to get high again? Is it lunchtime, dinner time? Is it Friday night? Some people have this conception of winos and folks on Skid Row, and those are alcoholics. They didn't start there. Not usually. They end there. Some of those folks are there, doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, and ended up in Skid Row. And, of course, at one time, they drank normally, and then through a progression we call craving, they get into a situation where they have an allergic reaction. Some people have it genetically predisposed. I don't know if they science has come up with that, but my experience shows that there's some groups that are genetically predisposed to alcohol. As soon as they take in a drink of alcohol, it produces the allergic reaction. Now, some people, and I'm for one, had drank long enough and hard enough and started producing that allergic reaction. So there's all shades and colors. All we know that is at a certain point, it turns on you, and it no longer gives you the effect that you want. It's fleeting, and you're always chasing that effect. And then it comes to the point where you have no, you can't make a decision anymore. Most people think that alcoholics are either weak people, bad people, evil people. We're not evil people trying to get good, righteous. We're not bad people trying to get good. We're not vile people trying to get a higher life. What we are is we're ill people. We have a sickness trying to get well. And the average person cannot connect the two. Your first meeting of AA can be scary and confusing. You're in pain and distress. Every nerve is ready to beat a hasty retreat. You feel beaten down by life. You're in a place where you would have never, in your wildest dreams, would have ended up. The last house on the block. Was this not the place where people from Skid Row would go? Aren't these the denizens who lurked under the overpasses and cardboard boxes? You might have come to the rooms of AA with a direction from the court. We call that a nudge from the judge. You might come in to keep an employer at bay, to ensure your continued employment, or a well-meaning spouse, your wife or significant other who's become unmanageable. You hope nobody sees you. You scrunch down in your seat in a vain attempt to go unnoticed. You might have been a town drunk in a city of millions. Now you're afraid someone might recognize you. There are slogans posted around the wall on the walls of AA. Think, think, think. Let go, let God. Keep it simple. First things first. Keep coming back just for today. The 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are prominently displayed on two separate plaques like the Ten Commandments of some secret occult organization. People are milling around looking to capture their favorite seat, which gives a perspective that is both familiar and unique. The room abounds with chatter and clatter, and high above the growing din, a call to order as the meeting begins. A welcome to the group and an introduction by the chair is quickly followed by a moment of silence to reflect on those who still suffer, followed in concert by the serenity prayer. To wit, God grant me the power to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The thought may occur that this is a religious organization bent on some kind of conversion. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Getting brainwashed was not for me. They explained it was more like a dry cleaning, if you please. As long as it has since been made known, when you don't want to do something, any excuse will do. I have long run out of options and have nowhere else to place my shoes. The chair asks, is there anyone for the very first time, anytime, anywhere in a meeting of AA? And would give us your first name so we can get to know you. To raise or not to raise the hand, that is the question. To get to know me, oh brother. In a moment of courage, a hand rises to the occasion, and in a meek, small voice whispers, hi, my name is Jane, or John, and a thought flashes most distinct, I wish I could disappear. I really don't want to be here. A combined chorus of warm hellos and welcome, glad you're here, is heard. The meeting is directed right towards you, how everyone got here. Somebody told my story. How did they know that much about me? We hear that in AA all the time. People will come in and they'll be sitting there and somebody will tell their story. Most of what was said in your first meeting, for sure, most of what was said with great passion, resolve, and aplomb. Tell you the truth, most of what I heard was blah, blah, blah. Halfway through, the chair stopped the meeting to pass the basket and explain, according to the seventh tradition, that every AA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. If it's your first meeting, it's on us. This way, nobody can tell us what to do, what to say, when to close the lights. We do it ourselves. They said there were people from all walks of life, people from Penn State and the state pen, people fresh out of the asylums, judges, doctors, and airline pilots. They told me that there was good news and there was bad news. The good news was there was a solution. The bad news was they were it. There was a lot of laughter. They laughed about their pain and their shame like it was some kind of inside joke. How could they laugh? My misery would have none of it. I remember one thing they kept repeating, keep coming back. Your next meeting is your most important meeting. You need to get a temporary sponsor and you need to start working the steps. You need to hit your knees when the craving comes and ask God to remove it and stay there until it does. They told me that this was a disease of mind, body, and spirit, and I could get well, but there were certain things I had to do. What they told me was suggestions, but they have worked for countless others, just like me. They told me if I did not work for me, they would gladly refund my misery. And in the end, they simply said, if your butt falls off, pick it up and put it in a chair. Get a temporary sponsor, and no matter what, keep coming back. The chair closed with we are in the chip system. It's how we celebrate milestones of sobriety. The first chip is a desire chip. It is an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life 24 hours, and there are any takers. It's an aluminum-colored disc with inscription, one day at a time, and to thine own self be true. If you're serious, it's time to get serious. Other chips for lengths of sobriety is picked up, each with loud applause and ever-increasing approval. The chairperson then said anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. What you hear here, who you see here, let it stay here. Everyone circled up, holding hands, and the chair said, let the circle represent what we could do together, what we cannot do ourselves. Whose father? Then in all unison, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. That would, folks, would be a thumbnail of your first AA meeting. Not as scary as you might have thought. No one asks you to say anything. Usually you're invited to give your first name if you want. Some folks just shrink to the side and nothing said either way. This is all suggested, and that's the way it has to be. Now, meeting protocols vary depending on your area, your region that you come from. Let's see. Okay. Meeting formats and procedures as diverse as there are groups. I've been to meetings all over most of these United States and some foreign countries, including Mississippi. In the early 1960s, when wife swapping was in vogue, an AA group formed around the platform of this platform of depravity. A moral indignant railed to Bill W. as to the potential black eye to AA in the dark cloud of guilt by association. Bill W. asked, "Are they staying sober?" This emphatic reply, "Yes, they are." Bill explained that every group has the right to be wrong. And so it goes with the individual as well. We try to exist with the least amount of rules and regulations. There is no other group on earth that has managed so well. We're a group of anarchists. And that would be the only way it could work. We have to let God be in charge. Nothing else will work. All we have is trusted servants. No one's in charge. Meeting formats of a bar, they developed surrounding and familiar formats of the nearby groups. The founders of the new group emulate the familiar, the good, and the not so good, and the unthinking. Change is hard for most, and the 12-step fellowship sometimes can be an extreme example of maintaining the status quo. Once upon a time, a fistfight broke out when someone changed the position of the chairs. We have paid dearly for our seats, and now we've become glued to our personal point of view. Yeah, I was one of my home groups in Austin, as a matter of fact. I think it was St. Teresa's, the Hilltoppers group. And what happened is that someone changed the chairs around. And I don't think they did it through the group conscience, but the way it was set up, someone thought, well, you know, it would be a little bit more efficient, get more people in, blah, blah, whatever the rationale was, and they moved it around. And some people took that very, they didn't like that. They liked the way it was. And that's fairly dominant in AA. My experience. Let's see, I think we have... Is that you, Harold?
Yes, that's me. Hello,
oh,
Joseph.
Okay.
Nice to be listening tonight. Great topic.
How long you been on? I just noticed.
Oh, about 5 minutes.
Okay. Harold's our co-host. And Harold has a position helping families all over the region, has a really good work, and sometimes he's out there late doing the work. And it's a good work. So I'm glad Harold made it in, and he's a good sounding board and has some great inside information.
It took me a minute or two to find the call-in number. I couldn't find it, but I went on to, how did I find it? Oh, I finally did a search for Silver Couch on the Blog Talk Radio website. Anyway, have you shared the call-in number yet?
I have not.
All right.
The guest call-in is 760-825-0940. Again, 760-825-0940. I was talking about the rigidity of how some of our groups, once they've adopted a format of understanding. And
we are creatures of habit, aren't we?
Aren't we?
It doesn't really matter what setting it is. People begin to attend, and then they very quickly form a pattern, a routine. And if anyone even suggests fiddling with the routine at all, they come unglued. I know the same thing happens at church. That sometimes that happens at the AA meeting. I have the privilege of, at this point in time, chairing a Sunday 6:30 meeting not too far from my house. I came in one night, and the chairs were all facing a different direction. They'd been shifted by 90 degrees. And the walls had been painted, and I was amused to see how that would affect some of the members. What I like about that meeting is that we do have a lot of new people coming in, and some of them have been sent by courts or medical facilities. But so the reaction wasn't too extreme, but how quickly we get used to a certain routine.
Yes, in church too. You made me think of that too. I usually sit in a certain spot, so I know sometimes when I had a regular job, I would always take the same route there and back. And after a couple of years of that, I'm going, you know, this is crazy. You know, even if it takes an extra couple minutes, let me take a different route just to change up the scenery. You know, and I think I'm going to do that Sunday. I think I'm going to sit up front. You know, if you come in early, you can always get the back seats.
Yes.
my church
sponsor, my first sponsor said, and he would quote Dr. Scott Peck, the author of The Road Less Traveled, and he would quote Dr. Peck as saying, "Welcome the strange and different." So it's a challenge. It's not that easy to do, but I strive for that at least once a week. Welcome the strange and different. And this time of year, please do that, you know, Halloween coming.
Change in AA is accomplished by at the group level by the function known as the group conscience. It's a parliamentary procedure is adopted, and anyone can bring up topics for discussion. Anything that can impact the group is addressed with lively aplomb, and in my experience, such is discussed, providing a platform to gripe, where egos are challenged and everyone is right and no one is wrong. We vote on an agreement to table the proposal to avoid a loggerhead of hurt feelings and then an extreme possible fight. Believe it or not, somehow, some way, things slowly get done. Harold?
You can say that again. Things slowly get done. I was amused. I lived in a city 4 years, and the way they had arranged the group conscience meetings was that anything that wanted to be considered had to be submitted in writing a week ahead of time, and that was doable. It added a tone of civility and seriousness to the situation. Ridiculous things that were proposed in writing. Well, I found that fewer ridiculous things were proposed when the proposal had to be a written proposal. So it eliminated the frivolous things ahead of time, and we actually got some things accomplished. It worked pretty well. It was always fascinating to me to have a look at what was going to come up, try to imagine what the decisions would be, and then attend the meeting and see what the decisions actually turned out to be. Always full of many surprises. What do you think, Joseph?
No, absolutely. I like that. I like that agenda. I think they were going to start that at primary purpose. The primary purpose here in Houston had to close down. Did you hear that? Did you?
No.
Harold? Yeah. The fire marshal came. It was an old, you know, ranshack building kind of deal. And the fire marshal came in because of the amount of people that were there. Sometimes they would be in a small home, and there would be, you know, it was a gutted out house, basically.
Oh.
And and they might have had 150, 200 people crammed into this small space. And, of course, the neighbors didn't like the idea of all these people milling around late at night and the noise and smoking and all that. And it was a rough neighborhood at one time, but, like, you know, it's come on the rebound. So I'm sure someone called the fire marshal, and then they were going to let 45 people in, but I think after that there was other issues, and they just closed it down. It was a shame. That helped a lot of people. But, you know, the law is the law.
Well, I've had wonderful experiences with the fire marshal, and after really sitting down, having a serious talk with the man that I met and worked most with, I found that this was a dedicated man who was a fire expert and knew how to anticipate problems and avoid them before they arose, and undoubtedly saved countless dozens of lives by really using his insight and his skill and saying, no, this can happen, that can't happen, this has to be there, we have to allow escape routes for this and that. And he takes his work seriously, and that's what is needed. I mean, we can look back. Every city has a long history of fires and disasters and lives lost, so we don't have to wonder about it. They know how to save lives, and that's what they're doing. So I welcomed every visit by the fire marshal in the buildings that I was in charge of, because, wow, all we need to do is go against what we already know, the science that we already have under our belts, and someone, you know, one life being lost is too many. So if they, of course it's a complex situation, but when I dealt with the fire marshal, I listened to what they had to say because they know what they're talking about. I imagine part of that was because of my training in the past. I was trained by the Red Cross to be a disaster responder, so I've had lots of firsthand experience trying to relate to people who have just lost everything in a fire, and sometimes even lost a loved one in a fire.
Uh-huh.
So
we're diverging.
I kind of have a different opinion about that. But they, you know, so I imagine that the people at that meeting can find a different place to meet, right?
Well, who knows? I was at another meeting, and they were opening some of the rooms up to them at Spring Branch. And I heard it's going to split up, and they're not going to call it primary purpose anymore. And so it's hard to say. It's a pretty pricey area. To get back on topic, once ingrained, meeting agendas are almost impossible to change. The collective thinkings may be that what worked for me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Who put you in charge? Rules we got, no stinking rules. What we got are stinking suggestions. In AA, we have more than our fair share of know-it-alls and egomaniacs with low self-esteem. How do I know what these things are all about? Because in part, I'm talking about me. Harold?
Well, that's... It's... It's really... interesting to, I've been to meetings in, let me think, four different countries. I've been to dozens of different meetings. And what I really enjoy is the fact that there's this, the spirit of recovery and survival at most of the meetings. The meetings that I enjoy most are ones where people realize this is a life and death struggle. And I found that in many, many different places. sometimes there was a bit of whining, and sometimes there were some war stories, but it's really refreshing to me to be able to go many different places and find the meetings taking place, brothers and sisters in the rooms, people basically, the way I see it is people all over the world getting together to increase their conscious contact with God. And I'm just so grateful for the steps, the meetings, the fellowship, the whole thing. It is phenomenal. I haven't been, well, I think 10 years is the longest I've attended any one meeting for a length of time. And I've participated in many, many times in the group conscience. I've seen things work very smoothly. If people get their toes stepped on, well, one of my sponsors said he could go out and start his own meeting, you know, and that is a possibility. Have you had experience with that, Joseph?
I have. The two requirements to start a new AA meeting is a resentment and a coffee pot. And the coffee pot is optional.
All right. Yeah.
What we do in the meetings is a level playing field where the spirit is affirmed, experience can be taught, lest I forget, let's have some fun and get caught up. Most of the meetings have a nice air to them. We start with a prayer, which is a invocation, right? Wouldn't you agree? And then all the meetings, no matter what the flavor, is they're always gratitude meetings, no matter what spin we take. And then at the end of the meeting, we have a benediction in the form of a prayer. Usually it's the Our Father. Depends on what part of the world you're in. I heard New York, they don't usually do that. They might say the Serenity Prayer, or they say something else. That's what Charlie was telling me, a roommate of mine one time, and that they're not that big into the Our Father up there. But we start with an invocation of some sort. And then it's all about gratitude, and an attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God. And then we end with a benediction. So there's a spiritual bump that goes along with these. Now, the format, now we have open meetings and closed meetings. Open her up and let her fly versus closed and locked, where anonymity is jealously stocked. Open meetings are just that, come one, come all. Young mothers with babes, toddlers even so. Most through courtesy, I know, enough to simmer down their tone. They know if there's small kids in there, they're going to watch their language. Even the occasional sociology student or intern from some specialty will find their way through the doors of recovery. Family members who would show support are welcome to stay and do their part. Doctors, lawyers, and captains of industry, airline pilots, judges with a sense of jurisprudence in order to avoid any tempest fury. Some of these folks on the closed meetings are professionals who are either in the public eye or in positions where they're are responsible for other people's safety and comfort. So they don't want the word getting out that they're alcoholic. Now, the onus has changed over the years, I find, but there is an onus still to today. I guess the question you'd have to ask yourself, if you knew your surgeon was an alcoholic, would that give you confidence prior to the operation? Harold?
It would me. I have the wonderful thing I think about recovery is that as I've been around a few decades, what I find is that everybody has problems, and most of the people you see on the street, they have problems, some very serious, some not so serious, and many, many people do not have any idea what their problems really are, where they stem from. But what I find in the recovery community is that we know what our problem is, we know where it stems from, and we know what the solution is. So I would prefer a surgeon that's in recovery, actually, because that can mean that he knows what his problem is, he's worked on his problem, and he lives in the solution. So, and I've met many employers who would prefer employees that are in recovery and recovering alcoholics. My favorite meeting, by the way, talking about walks of life, my favorite meeting years ago was when I was in attendance at Portland State University, and they had a noon meeting there, room 321. It was called the 321 meeting, and we went from 12 to 12:50. We very, very carefully started on time and ended on time, but the range of people, the walks of life, it was fantastic. There were young people there, and some had some years in recovery already. There were the elderly, college professors with gray hair, businessmen from the neighborhood. Portland State is right downtown Portland. And there were folks who had just decided to get recovery, and they lived under the bridge at the time. So we had every different possible, anything you could imagine, attending. And it was really rich. It was really fun and interesting and great recovery. I really enjoyed it. Have you been to a meeting where there's a wide range of people?
Sure. Most of the time are people that really don't mix. So I know primary was one of those groups. It was a younger crowd, which is it's good to see the kids come in younger than older. I think most of it is not because of alcohol. Most of it is because of powder. The crack cocaine, the methamphetamines, the other drugs, the heroin, the morphines, it hits them to the ground much harder. Alcohol is more of a slow blow, forget the pun. The requirement on a closed meeting is a desire to stop drinking, or if you think you have a problem with alcohol, you're welcome, otherwise not. One such club has a checkered history. Tell me if you know the name of this, Harold. A founder was fond of a lady with a similar disease who frequented the same club location. Alas, his wife was an Al-Anon, and to ensure his dalliance would avoid detection, he and his co-founding cronies closed down the club against any and all inspection. The players are all gone to their reward, but the club policy has remained intact, one of three clubs in the USA that remains completely and uniquely closed. Time takes time, and perhaps one day when the old-timers, the guardians of the status quo, go the way of all flesh, things might change, or will boast how it uniquely remained the same. The only thing is true that there's room for two. Harold, do you have any idea who that is?
I can't think of it. Fill me in.
Post Oak.
Ah.
That's their deal. It's a completely closed club, and that's how it started, because one of the founders, White, he had a dalliance going with one of the AA girls, and he wanted to make sure his Al-Anon wife couldn't spy on him. And that's why they closed it down. He's long gone, but the club remains closed.
So it's a recovery club like
it's a club, yeah.
It's a club.
And now, it's like Lamplighters in the sense that there's a corporation, and then inside the rooms they provide space for the groups. But my experience is they don't follow that. I've had personal experience with them. They don't follow that at all. It's a renegade kind of deal. They're a law unto themselves. A lot of attorneys in there, a lot of wheelers and dealers, and a lot of ego in that club. But this, you know, they don't cotton to the street folks too much. There's not too many street people come in, and one of the reasons is they feel comfortable in there. The joke went like this. You know, somebody was deriding Post Oak, and the fella said, "Hey, wait a minute, I got sober in Post Oak." And the other guy says, "Well, that only proves that if you want it bad enough, you can get sober in a bar." Yeah, a little poke at Post Oak. They can handle it. Don't worry. They're okay. We have trusted servants. The chairperson brings the room to order. Business is announced. Hello, everyone. The meeting of XYZ Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Joseph G., and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 10, 1997. This is a no-texting zone, and please stay off the pager and stay off the phone. Put it on stun if you got to run. Thank you. Let us take
put
a moment of silence.
Got to run.
Pardon me?
That's great.
Let's take a moment of silence to use in your own way, followed by the serenity prayer. The silence hangs as the spirit is enlivened and thoughts are corrected or collected. Sometimes a barely audible and collective exhale of serenity is summoned. And I notice sometimes it's good to leave that hang in for a minute and let people collect their thoughts and get into the spirit. The longer you hold that spirit, the better the meeting, in my experience, will be. The serenity prayer, anyone attending the first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, anytime, anywhere, would you please identify yourself by your first name so we can get to know you? A pre-agreed. Now, this is something that they used to do at Post Oak. I didn't even know this, and other clubs. And I think it's a great idea, maybe in a beginner's meeting. Is anyone attending their first alcoholics meeting anytime, anywhere, would you please identify yourself by your first name only so we can get to know you? Now, a pre-agreed group of like-gendered individuals will accompany you to another room so we can introduce you to AA. The inquiry would determine if the newcomer has been given the gift of desperation, a nudge from the judge, keeping a threatening spouse or employer at bay, or somehow just gotten lost somewhere along the way. A temporary sponsor could be made available, giving the newcomer direction, hope, and a sense of redemption. If they're just window shopping, the minute meeting would assure them that they are willing to follow our path, that they could expect a better than average chance for a daily reprieve from this disease of mind, body, and spirit. Because of the organization required, might be, well, like herding cats, a newcomer's meeting might be the most appropriate venue. Harold?
I think that's a great idea. Larger meetings, I think that's a great idea to have a handful of people whose assignment is to really help a new person feel welcome, begin to understand how things work, to get a temporary sponsor, and just to help guide them along the way, figure out what their motivation is. That's a wonderful idea. I would have appreciated that when I first started, and
I imagine me too.
Most people would. Yeah, Joseph.
And this is a suggestion. I would be passing a newcomer's packet, men for men and women for women. If you're so inclined, please put your name and phone number in order to help the newcomer develop his or her recovery lifeline, meeting schedules, AA pamphlets, and any other material suggested by group conscience. Sometimes even big books are given out. Post Oak, who had like $800,000 in their, what do they call it? The contingency fund? What do they call it? There's a name for that. A prudent reserve. They didn't want to buy. They didn't want to give away big bucks to the newcomers.
Well, you gotta.
I know. You gotta love them, right?
Gotta love them.
Why with all that money, why won't you buy some big books and give them to the newcomer? Because we have so many people coming in and out. Well, at least they got the big book. It's going to end up somewhere.
Yes.
Right. But anyway, okay. And then you read Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. That's our primary purpose. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not aligned with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help the other alcoholic to achieve sobriety. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help others alcoholics to achieve sobriety. We ask that everyone respect the privacy and anonymity of each person here. The opinions expressed in this meeting are those of each speaker and not necessarily those of AA as a whole. We ask of those who share their experience, strength, and hope to focus on an intended purpose, recovery from alcoholism. If you're a newcomer to AA or the XYC group, please stay after the meeting as we would like to get to know you. I've asked to read how it works, and we read how it works. I think that's very important. Some of us have heard it 1,000 times, and for some, it's the very first time. Then we read the tradition of the month. The traditions would hold the groups together. In St. Paul, Minnesota, this is what they do, Harold. The chair will those who have worked the 12 steps and are available to be sponsors, please raise your hand. Please take a moment and look around at these people who are willing to give of their experience, strength, and hope so that you can attain and then maintain sobriety in AA. Thank you. They do that in the beginning of the meeting.
That's a great idea. I like that a lot. Yeah, because the whole idea is to connect, to work with somebody else, to talk with someone else, to make it easy for people to see the value. To make it easy for people to see the value. That's what it's all about. To be clean and sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. We've got to stay focused on that. And set everything else aside. All personal preferences, all personality differences, and instead place principles above personalities. And I'm constantly on the lookout for situations where personalities creep in, and my sponsor taught me to be aware of what the principles are, be aware of the personalities as they creep in, and then focus on the principle anytime I catch my personality at work or anyone else's. So that those are some of the guidelines that I follow. How about you, Joseph?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As I did the rumradio.org website, I came to more and more understandings and agreements. And, I'm coming on 15 years, so I'm kind of slow on the uptake. You know, I wish I would have dug in sooner. But, you know, sometimes it's in God's time. It's not in my time. So I have to look at it that this understanding and information through experience has come my way at a particular time. And maybe if this was 10 years ago, the website wouldn't have taken off because people weren't on the website that much. So
yeah, people
maybe
weren't
on
the internet very much.
No.
And I find
now
that every year that goes by, I've learned more. My awareness of the steps and the principles and recovery gets larger and larger. At year 17, I discovered in step 11 is the word us. I thought that said me for 17 years. At that point, I read it a little more carefully, and it has the word us in step 11. Not me, it's us. So we can know God's will for each other. We can get insight and understanding about God's will for each other. I can borrow faith from you, and you can borrow faith from me. And we can understand God's will for each other. I'm not saying we can work, I can work your program, but I'm saying the way things are set up, and I believe this to be true, I've experienced it, we can know God's will for each other.
Yes, I think that.
What do you think?
Especially with as a sponsor. A sponsor can really help with that. I've gotten insights and intuitions about sponsees that normally I would not have expounded on, and then it just is like, wow, where did that come from? What is sponsorship? When Bill W., only a few months sober, was stricken with a powerful urge to drink, this thought came to him: you need another alcoholic to talk to. You need another alcoholic just as much as he needs you. That's what sponsorship is. The one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities don't.
Amen.
Step five, and a lot of folks don't catch this. They gloss over it. They kind of miss it. And I think this is really some of the rigidity of AA is. Step five, it says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step five was the answer. It was the beginning of true kinship between God and man. So what that's saying is they're expecting not only to do a fifth step, but to hear a fifth step.
Yes.
And until you hear a fifth step, you still didn't belong. You're still just a visitor. And you tell
That's
some
my
people
experience.
And they go, yeah, and some people, you tell them that and they go, well, where did you get that? I says, it's in the 12 and 12 under step five. You know, there it is. You know, why? I never saw that before. Yeah. And some people, long time, they'll say, well, I'm not the sponsoring type. I says, well, then you really don't belong here yet. You're just still a visitor. But I'm staying sober. Yeah. Is that not enough? No. We think of Man Unthinking who says sobriety is enough. A good meeting is when you heard something you needed to hear. A great meeting is when you said something that someone else needed to hear.
That's terrific. I'm enjoying this reading so much. I just want you to go on and on. This is a great reading that you're sharing tonight. Let's hear some more. Uh-oh. Did my phone shut off? I think it might have. Is my phone broken? Let's see. Now we got 7 minutes. 7 minutes. Well, I think my phone's working. Maybe Joseph's battery died. So let's see. Are there? I better shut off this speaker here. Go back over here. So I've enjoyed the reading very much, and let me pick up where it says, "What is sponsorship, and I'm on the rumradio.org website, actually. And let me go up. I'm under the captain's table. I'm on the page with meetings in your neck of the woods is the heading. Meetings in your neck of the woods. We go about halfway down, and it says, what is sponsorship? Alcoholics Anonymous began with sponsorship when Bill W., only a few months sober, was stricken with a powerful urge to drink. This thought came to him. You need another alcoholic to talk to. You need another alcoholic just as much as he needs you. When we first began to attend AA meetings, we may feel confused and sick and apprehensive. Although people at meetings respond to our questions willingly, that alone isn't enough. Many other questions occur to us between meetings. We may find we need constant, close support as we begin learning how to live sober. So we select an AA member with whom we can feel comfortable, someone with whom we can talk freely and confidentially, and we ask that person to be our sponsor. Whether you are a newcomer who is hesitant about bothering anyone, or a member, let's see, there we go, there's Joseph on the cell phone. Hi, Joseph. No, I can't hear you, so I just took off reading. We've got 4 minutes left in the program. How about if I continue to read that paragraph where you were? All right. Okay. All right, good. I don't think the listeners can hear you either. I went onto the website. So how far down should I go? 5 minutes. Let's see. 5 minutes. 5 minutes left. The chair again makes itself known, and the queries are there. Are there any burning desires? If they do not speak, they very well might drink. The chair explains that we are on a chip system. We celebrate lengths of sobriety. Is there anyone celebrating an AA birthday today that would like to be recognized? Is there anyone celebrating years of sobriety for this current month that would like to be recognized? Please give us your name and your sobriety date. Is there anyone celebrating months of sobriety? Please give us your name, 18 months, 9 months, 6 months, 3 months, 2 months, and 1 month. People have walked up to the chair and to raucous applause and a hug to acknowledge their recovery. The momentum continues to build as the chair pauses and pulls out an aluminum-colored disc and explains that this is a beginner's chip. It's an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life for 24 hours. Are there any takers? Please come up the well-worn path of those who have come before you. Please give us your name. My name is John or Jane, and for the very first time, they have the opportunity to say that they are an alcoholic. To a like-minded group of peers, sounds like step one to me. Well, the chair settles the meeting down with an acclamation. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. What you hear here, who you see here, let it stay here. And the group chimes in, hear, hear. The chair says, please clean up the wreckage of your presence. Anything that came in with you, please take it out with you. And then the chair says, we will close in the usual manner. They either pick or they do the trick. please take us out. And the room circles up hand in hand, and the rest is extemporaneous, but as for me, it goes like this. Let's circle, let this circle represent what we can do together, what we cannot do alone. Who's Father? And then in unison, we repeat the Lord's Prayer. So the clock is ticking. That's it.